Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Paditamastu Mavid Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Do you have a copy? This is the chapter 10 of Panchadashi for the those of you who have just come. So repeat after me. Aham mitya bimantayaha. Aham mitya bimantayaha. Karta sautasya satanam.
Karta sautasya satanam.
Manastasya kriye antaha.
Manastasya kriye antaha.
Bahirvaritti kramotite.
Bahirvaritti kramotite.
Sandhi. Aham iti abhimanta yaha karta asau tasya sadhanam. Manaha tasya kriye antaha. The actual word there is antar. Yeah. But in Sandhi it becomes, and it will stay, and it will, that Repa will stay. It's a little different than the other type of Sandhis that take the Sarga or whatever. But when this Repa breaks, it becomes Antaha. And since this is the end of a pada, the end of a quarter, when you're, even when you're chanting it, you're going to break the Sandhi because of the pause. You know, there's four quarters, and so at the end of each quarter, the Sandhi will break. So that's why we said, Anastasya kriye antaha. If we kept the R, it would mean that we would go all the way through. Manastasya kriye antar bahir vritti kramotite. But if we break the sandhi, you have to say antaha. Mm. You know, if we take a pause at the end of the quarter, you have to break the sandhi. So it'd be, that's why you probably couldn't say, where's that visarga there? I only see an R. It's because we broke the sandhi because of coming to the end of a quarter. So, second line, manaha, tasya, kriye, antar, bahir. Antar is the real word. And
so
it becomes antaha.
As
visarga? Because of the sandhi. Well, when it comes to...
It kind of goes backwards.
Yeah, it does kind of go backwards. When you break it, you're just going to say, you're not going to say antar, you'll say antar. That's a good point, but that's how it is. Antara, bahihi, vritti, vritti, kramotite. Aham iti abhimantayaha, karita asau tasya sadhanam. Manaha tasya kriye antaha, bahihi, vritti, kramotite. You're right, though. I should be able to just say, manas tasya kriye antara, bahir vritti, kramotite. I don't know.
But you can't.
That the well, I'm not sure now that you brought it up. The word, the substantive is antar. It's antar, okay? It's going to take the... And it remains antar in this sandhi. In many situations, it becomes antaha. Okay, so I think when there's a pause, it becomes antaha in usage. Okay. Just to connect this with the previous verse, in the previous verse, it says bondage really is the absence of vichara is caused by lack of vichara, lack of analysis. The analysis, though, is not the proper word. We have to really keep the word vichara. But it's a type of analysis of the vision of the Upanishads. And that analysis within the tradition is called Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. The being taught the vision of the Upanishads using the teaching methodologies that are involved in any given Upanishad, that's Shravana. Answering any doubts around that Shravana, around that vision of the Upanishads is Shravana. Manana is questioning that vision. any doubts that you have about the veracity of that vision is called manana, and the answering of those type of doubts, manana. And then nididhyasana is a way, that's a meditative practice in that is focused on what you've actually seen or recognized at the time of teaching. So that's why it's so important to understand that the Upanishad is not just a philosophy. It's not that just a theology or a philosophy which you're supposed to hear and then go meditate on and try to understand it and realize it. It's actually a pramana, a means of knowledge that is meant to point out, to make you recognize certain realities that you haven't been able to discern, or you haven't had the means of knowledge to make a certain discernment or viveka, discrimination between the nature of yourself and the things that you objectify. There's what we call a mutual superimposition taking place between yourself and the things that you're aware of. Instead of saying, oh, I'm myself, this is myself, the subject, and these are the things that are known to me, there's a number of things in which that where that viveka does not take place. Like in reference to me, this conscious being in my body, my physical body, I say, I am the body. An ahankara is born, an I notion is born, which identifies, naturally born, which identifies my being with the physical body. Or my being, I am tired, or I am have so much energy, I'm identifying my own being with my prana, with the vital force. If I'm identifying myself with my the thoughts in my mind, I am, you know, or my emotions, then I become that. I am that, not that I'm aware of that. Even though I will often say I'm aware of that, I know, I'm just aware of myself as being so tired now. Even though I talk sometimes as though there's a viveka discrimination there actually isn't. I take myself to be one with, to actually be that. And so the vichara is the teaching methodology, the pramana, the means of knowledge that's held in the Upanishad to make me recognize my own nature and the relationship of my own nature of me to all of the experiences, the objectifiable experiences that I have. And so that's this word vichara. Unless that pramana, that means of knowledge, has been in operation, this mutual superimposition is just simply there as a given. I am the body, I am my mind, I am happy, I am sad, I am awake, I am tired, I am smart, I am stupid. I am, I am, I am. That's the ahankara always landing on the upadhi, the conditioning adjunct, which that whatever thing can actually take the I in a believable way. And it'll say, I am this little table here. If you said that and you were serious, I would really have some concerns. but if you're just seeing and acting like you are the body, mind, sense, organs, that seems perfectly normal, and we're all in the same boat. For all of us, there's a lack of this vichara, a lack of this means of knowledge until there isn't. When that means of knowledge is there and is taking place, and I'm able to see, then everything starts to change because I recognize the difference between my own presence, my own being, and all the experiences that come and go. So he says, this bondage, what we call bondage, is because of an absence of this vichara. You know, it's an absence of it. And when the vichara is there, when I'm using the means of knowledge to make me recognize the Upanishad pramana, when I'm utilizing that to make me recognize my own nature, then that vichara destroys the bondage. It destroys the bondage because I had taken myself to be one with, identical with, these things that are by nature bound. It means they're subject to suffering, they're subject to birth and death, they're subject to change, and there's not a thing I can do about it. You know, they're subject to illness, subject to mental stress, etc. You know, and so I have no really control over those changes, so I'm bound and limited by the upadhi, by these conditioning adjuncts, the body, mind, sense organs. I'm limited by them in terms of space, in terms of time, and in certain terms of attribute. And there's nothing I can do about it. I'm limited by them because they're born and they die and they change continually. You can't just say, no, stop. This is the perfect situation right here. This is it. Stop. No more movement. No. Everybody's think you're insane, that's all. You know? We wish some of these beautiful moments where I'm whole and complete and full. And I know this is how I'm meant to be. We wish I would just stay that way. Mm-hmm. But, no. No, in reference to states of experience that are born within time and space. States of experience born within time and space, existing within time and space, are bound by change. It's just the nature of the creation. It's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because something wrong with the creation. There's nothing wrong with the creation either. It's just when you expect it to give you something that it absolutely cannot give you, then we have a sense of being bound. But that bondage itself is destroyed by vichara, because in fact yourself is not bound, it has never been bound. It is absolutely full, absolutely free. What we saw is the Paramananda, that ananda which is free of time, free of space, free of quality, is just myself, unimpeded self is that ananda. That is in fact who I am, who I've always been, and because it is who I am in reality, knowledge can solve the problem by removing the ignorance, self-ignorance, that has caused this superimposition. Thus, therefore, you know, since the problem is one of ignorance, which causes this superimposition between me and what I'm experiencing, which I can objectify and I'm experiencing, because that's what's causing the problem, tasmat, therefore, one should always be doing until it's a given. One should sarvada eva, definitely you should always be doing vichara. You should always be spending your time in satsang, in class, you know, gaining this knowledge, in doing this inquiry, until there's no inquiry left to be done because there's clarity there. And that vichara should be toward what? Therefore, you should always be doing this vichara on the nature of the jiva, this one who is bound, this me that seems to be bound by space and time and objectivity, quality, and the paramatma, which is absolutely free, unimpeded me, consciousness, limitless, non-dual consciousness. There's a vichara that needs to be done. I need to expose myself to the shravana, manana, nididhyasana until I gain that clarity. And so that being so, now he says, okay, well then, if we have to do vichara on the jiva and the paramatma, that self which is limitless, my being, this me that is limitless, then let's take a look at what is the nature of the jiva. Okay. The jiva, I have to recognize what about me is called the jiva. Okay. And what about me is called the paramatma. Are there two things, a jiva over here and a paramatma over here? How does that whole thing work? So, in this verse, he first is going to define really what we call the ahankara, this I notion. It says, aham iti abhimanta yaha karta asau. He says, the one who is thinking is an action, thinking belongs to the mind, right? I am thinking. So what the thinking, all thoughts themselves are called vrittis. A thought is a vritti. The mind is called the antakarana, that inner instrument. So an antakarana vritti is a thought modification. So the mind is having continual changing thought modifications. I have this thought, then I have this thought, then I have this thought, then I have this thought. So now, he says, the one who has an abhimanta, abhimanta means I am taking the thought to be myself. I'm the one who takes this situation or this thought to be me. That's the abhimanta. So to give you an example of what the abhimanta means, the one who does this abhimana. If I say I have a thought of say I'm looking outside at the trees. Did you hear what I just said? I'm looking outside at the trees. That I am looking is this abhimana, where the I is placed upon, in this sense, the eyes that are looking. Now, what if I say, Yeah, I'm thinking very seriously about that. Now the abhimana is the placing of the aham on the mind, which is at this time thinking very seriously. So I would say, as an abhimanta, I am a very serious thinker. At this moment, you know, I'm thinking very, very seriously. So now the aham, this I, is located on this one who is thinking. Or how about, let's take a walk. I think I'm going to walk down to the river. Now I am the walker. I am the one who is walking to the river. Right? And so the I, the me, this conscious being that is me, is just very naturally becoming automatically, without any thought, really. It's just kind of an automatic experience. I'm walking to the river. So now the Atma, yourself, walks, right? Your Atma, the Atma, thinks. The Atma, Atma means yourself. It walks, it thinks, it talks. I'm talking. Now the Atma is talking. If I means me, when I say I, myself, Atma means the self. For those who might not know, the Atma means yourself. Yourself now is talking. Okay, so the self is a talker. I am looking. The self is a looker, a seer. Right? Because I is me. Now notice, if I say, like, I am walking to the river, or I'm going to walk to the river, there is what we call a superimposition that I don't even know about, because I've never thought about it, probably, unless I have, but chances are, until I come to some spiritual discipline that makes all of this clear, you know, I say I'm walking to the river, the I, the me, this conscious being that I am, right, is taking on the qualities of this body, which has the capacity of walking. Right, so I am a walker. I walk. That means I am, if I say I walk, that means I am this body that is able to walk and is walking now. Right? Do you see that? So the conscious being me is just automatically superimposed on this body. So this body becomes me, the conscious being, and I become the body that can walk and that can, you know, is able to talk and has sense organs and all of these things. I can do all of these things. So what this says is, the one who attributes the I to anything that can take it, like, and any upadi is anything, and the word upadi means anything that I experience that can actually hold the I. Like my body, for instance. You can say, I am my body. I might not say that, I am my body. It's a stupid thing to say. Yeah. But you know you are your body, you know. But instead of saying, I am my body, you'll say, I'm fat, I'm too fat. or I need to do more exercise, or I'm old. These are all attributes of the body. I'm older, I'm younger, whatever. They're all attributes of the body. So I take myself to be that. The one who performs that act of taking oneself to be that is the I, the one who attributes the I to an object, that an object, something that is objectifiable. That one is called the karta. You always ask, well, who is the karta? It's the one who is attributing the nature of the self to whatever is going on. So in terms of the ears become the karta for hearing. As long as karta means it's nominative singular, you know? So the Swamiji will joke sometimes and say the karta, the doer, literally, the doer is the ER ending nouns. Like, I am the hearer. I am the thinker. I am the emoter, you know. I am the talker. I am the walker. So I attribute all of my activities and even my sensory perceptions, my sense organs also, you know, to me. The me is superimposed on that. And so that is the karta. What is the karta really? It's just the superimposition of me, the conscious being, on the particular activity attribute of the body, mind, sense organs. You see what I'm saying? So the Atma is the Atma, the question is the Atma the Karta? So here it says we're going to analyze the Jiva. So the Jiva, it's interesting here. The Jiva involves a combination, a superimposition, born of ignorance, of me, of the Paramatma, of the self that is free of time, space, and attribute, upon the organ of action, or the body, which is doing the activity. Whatever the activity is if you can add an ER to it, you know, then that's the ahankara. You know, just add the ER, there's the ahankara. I am that. I am the one who is hearing. I am the one who is thinking. I am the one who is sad. That I becomes an attribute. I mean, I take to myself all of those attributes as qualities of me. That is the karta, the one, the ahankara that is taking itself to be these things that belong to the body, mind, sense organs, all of which are objectified. Objectified means all of which I am aware of, all of which I enjoy a subject-object relationship with, which I haven't really thought deeply about. I haven't done much analysis until I do. I've done very little analysis, very little discrimination between the subject and the object. I just take them to be one and the same thing. Right? And so here it says, the one who is that one is the karta, the doer, who attributes the sense of I, right, to that object, that upadhi that is doing the doing. I take myself to be that. And then it says, so that one is called the karta, the doer. Then he says, tasya sadhana manaha, tasya manaha. It says, the instrument of action, the instrument of action to make that possible is the manas, the sadhana for that, you know, for that karta, is the mind, that sense of doership, or that ahankara. The sadhana, the instrument of action for that, the instrument that makes that possible is the sadhana. So the sadhana for that phenomena is your mind. And he says, and this mind has two types of action, okay? Two types of activity. Okay, so this is something... This is something nice. So matasya kriye means for that mind, there are kriye is the dual. There are two activities for that mind. Antara bahihi and in antara bahihi vritti. Now, what's interesting here? The word vritti, this is just for some different ones of you, a little extra thing. The word vritti, really means, when we say vritti, we're usually talking about a thought modification. A vritti is a thought modification. And so when we use the word vritti, it's a shortcut for antakarana vritti, a modification of the mind, an activity of the mind. So if you look up the word vritti in the dictionary, it's going to say an activity. You know, it's an activity.
Should we stop the coffee?
What was it? Yeah.
It was but gurgling away.
Yeah, I didn't hear it.
Not enough coffee, it was just filling up.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Okay. So, there are two types of vrittis for the mind. We can say two type of activities. But these activities, when we're talking about the mind, we just call them vrittis, like thought modifications. There are two things that the mind, two types of vrittis that the mind has two types of thought modifications. One type of thought is antaha. It's directed inward, right? The second type of thought is directed outward, okay? So he says, tasya kriye, for the mind, there are two actions, kriye, two actions. An internal vritti, right? And an bahantara vritti, an internal vritti, and an external vritti in that sequence. So my in consecutively, the mind can be turned inward or it can be turned outward. So the activity of the mind can be directed inward or it can be directed outward. As we'll see in the next verse, but I'd kind of like to explain this and then go to the next verse. The internal, what they mean by takes place in succession. In this, the word here is krama uttite. It means there's an order to it. So it does this and it does this. It can go into, it can turn this way and it turns this way successively. In a sense, let me try to explain this. Any given vritti, any given thought modification has maybe four, you can even say five, characteristics that make up that vritti. Two of the characteristics, I'm not going to use the whole three, I'm just going to use two right now, is conscious being. So every vritti, to just explain what that conscious being, how that plays out in the vritti, is I am, the amness, the vritti enjoys amness, and it enjoys consciousness. Every vritti. There's being, let's put it this way, there is being and there is consciousness. Okay? In any vritti. And there is nama rupa, there is name and form. So this is what I think is so amazing. The same consciousness, conscious being, the satchit, when the vritti is focused on the satchit, the conscious being, that gains aham, that is me. So for instance, in a given vritti, say if I'm looking outside of the tree, right? Now there's two things happening. There's the external perception, the nama rupa, the name and form that is involved in the vritti, and there's the conscious being, which is as though reflected, called chidabhasa, which is reflected in the vritti. So there's conscious being on the internal side, and there's nama rupa as though on the external side, even though there's just one vritti there, that one vritti has name and form, and it has conscious being. Okay. So now, if you say, I see the tree, I am the seer of the tree, I am the knower of the tree, in that ahankara that's making a statement like that is identifying the sat chit with the knowership, with the conscious being. I am the knower, I am the seer of the tree, right? You see that? So then I become the knower in reference to that vritti because I'm identifying with the satchit, with consciousness, which is part of the vritti, okay? Now, with a tree, which is also the vritti, part of the vritti, the tree is known, right? The tree is known. The self is... The focus is on the self. The self is the knower. This is really, to me, this is just the amazing thing. I call the consciousness, which is directed at the vritti, which is directed at me, the knower. I call the consciousness, same consciousness, which is illumining the tree, the known. So the same consciousness, the same me, the same self, gets designated as the knower and as the known. In fact, the knower and the known are one and the same consciousness. But the ahankara, the I is not going to identify with the tree. I am not the tree, right? It's only going to identify with me, the conscious being. And yet, the consciousness which is illumining the vritti, you know, that consciousness is illumining the vritti, which if I look looking focused inward, I call as me or as a hum, and if I'm looking outward, I call as, instead of me, the knower, the aham, where the ahankara is, the karta, if I'm looking outward, I call it as the known. Consciousness becomes called the known, as differentiated from me in language, not in experience. The knower and the known are one and the same consciousness. Consciousness itself is neither a knower nor is it known. That duality simply isn't there. There is one conscious being reflected in a vritti. So now I have to go a little bit deeper. The vritti itself is called the chidabhasa. The material of the vritti itself is called chidabhasa, that which as though reflects consciousness. Right? As though reflects consciousness. And so when the awareness, just consciousness itself, is illumining the thought modification, which itself is sattva, reflects consciousness, right? Then the consciousness which is reflected becomes me, because that's who I am. I am the conscious being, but the consciousness which is reflected becomes me, the one who is aware of the nama-rupa which is reflected, which becomes the known. So I become the knower in reference to the vritti, and the nama-rupa which I'm objectifying becomes the known. But actually, what is the reality of the situation is that there is one me, one conscious being, that is neither the knower or the known, and is both the knower and the known. Right? So to try to, I have to do, just work around this a little bit. Say if you think, for instance, when you are having a dream, say you have a dream, and in the dream, all kinds of jivas, individuals, are there in the dream doing their own thing, and you're identified with one of them. Okay? Now, in the reality, which you could understand when you're the waker, but probably not when you're identified with a character in the dream, the reality is that the entire dream comes from one non-dual consciousness, me. You know, the entire dream projects from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. So the entire dream, the entire mitya dream, you know, enjoys one non-dual consciousness, in fact, which is neither the knower or the known. It is self-evident conscious being. It is not performing any function whatsoever. But from the standpoint of the character within the dream, or all of the characters actually, the character within the dream, when the characters within the dream have a vritti, a thought modification, that vritti is going to be expressed. What's going on in that vritti is going to be expressed in two ways. When the vritti is, when I'm looking at the as the reflection of consciousness, that is who I am. That is me, the one who knows the objects that are illumined by the vritti. So say if I'm directing my attention toward these beautiful trees outside, then these trees are known. It's consciousness plus the trees. The knownness that the trees are enjoying is actually the swarupa, the very nature of consciousness. So now the trees as idam, as this. The trees are known as this, not as me. But because in that vritti there is the reflection of consciousness, I don't identify with the trees, I identify with consciousness. And so then the ahankara identifies the reflection of consciousness as me, and it identifies the objects that are known as this, or as the trees, or whatever it is that I'm seeing. So this division, this false division actually of the knower and the known, takes place just because of the nature of the thought modification. The thought modification reflects consciousness, and it also reflects the objects of consciousness. What we don't realize
is that the knower is an object of consciousness as well as the object of as well as the trees. Now, to see what I mean by that, say you have a vritti, a thought modification of the trees of the nama-rupa, the names and forms, those are known, right? Now, we don't ever think about the fact that in this, say I'm looking out here, this beautiful window out of the lovely trees, okay? The trees are known. If I'm thorough about it, we don't bother with all of this, but let's just be thorough about it. The trees are known, right? This room, from me, my standpoint, you have your own standpoint looking this, right? These trees out here, okay? These trees are known. Now, let's just expand it. The room is also known. The trees are beyond the window. This room is known. Yes, that's true. Okay. Let's go inward a little bit closer. These clothes are known. Right? This body is known. Is that right? I know all of your bodies, but of course mine is invisible. Now, this body is known. Right? That's all part of the vritti. We're just expanding the vritti, and there's no such thing as seeing one little tiny tree leaf there or something. So this room is known. This body, these clothes are known. This body is known, right? These sense organs that are used to see the trees, they are also known. What do you mean? Are you aware of your sense organs or not? No. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're aware of your sense organs. You know if they're working. You know if you have 20/20 vision. You know if you're deaf. You can objectify your sense organs. They're very well known to you. You know that they're functioning. You know that you're using your sense organs right now to see the trees and to see this room. So, in fact, the vritti that can look inward or outward is looking inward only in the sense that it's identifying consciousness with me. But the consciousness that is me is identified with this body-mind sense organs, right? And with the instruments that allow me to see the trees, and with the mind that is focused on the sense organs that allow for a thought modification of the trees. So I can only see that tree, those trees, because I have a mind and sense organs. So I am the mind and sense organs because of which the trees are seen. That's how it works. I become the kartha. Even though the kartha, the one who is responsible for the activity of seeing the trees, also is known, also enjoys nama-rupa, name and form. So, in fact, the instruments that allow for the perception of the trees and of the room and of this body and of these clothes and of my sense organs and of the thoughts in my mind, right? What allows for that, for all of those things to be known, is me, the conscious being. But I don't know that. Because I'm so quick to identify me, the conscious being, with the instruments that allow for the trees, room, etc. to be known. Even though those instruments are also known, right? So let me ask you, is your mind known? Do you know the thoughts in your mind? Are you aware of the thoughts in your mind? Do you watch the thoughts in your mind changing? Yes. What if you said no? You know, you can say no. You're aware of the thoughts, you're aware of what you objectify, those thoughts of the mind, you're aware of that. You have a subject-object relationship with your mind that's illumined. Right? So it belongs as part of the idamvritti, the this. It belongs to the this, because it is known, it is objectified. Right? Now you get to the nature of, we start to realize that the nature of the knower, that is really the identification born of ignorance of consciousness with something which is also objectified. Right? Consciousness objectifies itself, consciousness doesn't form an action of objectifying. But the fact is that the mind also is as objectified as the trees, right? And the thoughts are the perception, the sense organs are as objectified as the trees and of the mind. So these are all known. They all enjoy knownness. The trees enjoy knownness. The body enjoys knownness. The sense organs enjoy being known. The mind enjoys being known. Consciousness itself is known. Consciousness is known, not as an object, but as the self-evident, what we call Svetta Siddha, as self-evident consciousness does not need another consciousness to come into and to illumine it. So the knownness that we experience in reference to all of our experience, external experience, which we falsely divide into internal and external, because in fact, in reference to consciousness, all of it is external. All of it belongs to Maya. If you have a dream, it's not that the characters are the ultimate subject in the dream. The characters are part and parcel of the dream, and the whole thing is illumined by one non-dual consciousness. Right? Here it's just individually, it's the same thing. I am the self of the knower, sense organs, mind. I am the self, which allows to be known, the known. So for me, there is really no... The one who is the self of the knower and the known is me. Right? Is the subject. And so, and yet, the mind, because of self-ignorance, and this is what makes it a jiva, when it has a vritti, you know, I'm not going to identify with the things that I don't naturally take to be myself, the things that are not an upadhi. I don't naturally identify with that. I don't have a subtle body that goes out and includes the trees. My subtle body just goes through this physical body. And so all of the upadhis that I have, this conditioning adjuncts that I have, stop here. They didn't go out there. So this is me and this is and that is that. But it's a false division. It's a totally false division. And when you start to understand this, everything becomes quite interesting. The ahankara itself becomes the, what do you call it? The initial product of ignorance. It's the initial product of ignorance, this I notion that they call the ahankara. The initial product of self-ignorance is the I notion, right? Because I am me, I am here, right? But it's the mind and the sense organs, right, that reflect consciousness, that reflect me, and so that mind itself takes itself to be me. Because it doesn't, why would it know any different? Wherever your mind is, consciousness is. So the mind says, I'm the conscious being. And I have these sense organs, which are knowers, responsible for my gaining knowledge. And so I am a seer, I am a hearer. Because all of these means of knowledge involve me, involve consciousness. You know? And so consciousness is taken to be, to become identified, you know, with the knowership, the consciousness, the existence that is reflected or is really the adhishtana, you know, the truth of the vritti. And so this duality is formed. The duality that exists within our language, you know, is a product of self-ignorance, really. That's what it is. And it allows, it just puts words to this anyonya adhyasa, the superimposition that I'm experiencing. And that superimposition involves an ahankara. It involves an I notion. It's what causes me to identify, you know, with those sense organs and mind which are responsible as instruments for the knowing in a vritti. And then it doesn't identify with the things, the objects of the vritti. See what I mean? So that's a little, you know, I can do better, but I'll try it again a little bit later. So we'll be working on it. So here, let's look at this. Let's look at this next verse.
Well. Press again.
I touched something. Let's look at this quickly. I'll go into it more tomorrow. Antarmukha hamityesha
Antaramukhahamityesha
Pratikartaramulket Pratikartaramulket Bahirmukhedamityesha
Bahirmukhedamityesha
Bahyam Bahyam Vastvidamulket Bahyam Vastvidamulket.
Sorry, that's hard.
Antaha Antaramukha Aham Iti esha, iti esha, vrittihi, kartaram ulikhet. Bahihi, mukha, idam, iti esha, bahim, vastu idam ulikhet. What this just says quickly, I'm already working on this, but just to see it in this particular verse, antarmukha. Antaramukha means facing inward. The face is inward, facing inward. Antaramukha. Aham iti esha. Esha vrittihi. This, the vritti, for that vritti there is aham. That is the aham vritti. When the vritti is facing inward, facing toward its content of such consciousness, then that is what we call aham. And it is this making of this aham that creates the karta, the doer, kartaram ulikate. Okay? So that vritti, which is directing itself toward the conscious being, toward me. This is another little tricky thing. Not tricky, but nice to recognize. Your me experience, when you say me or I, or I'm going here, or this is me, this is myself, that sense of me that we're talking about, right, is the Paramatma. There is no other me experience other than Brahman. Brahman, yourself, the truth of your being, is the me experience. So when you say, I'm going to go to town, the I part of that sentence, I am going to town, is landing on Brahman, on the Paramatma, on the Pratyagatma, on the truth of your being. That is real. That is who you are, actually. So the sense of me is only, belongs to Brahman. If the whole universe went away, there would only be the sense of me, the sense of I. Right? The whole universe goes away. Me is still there. The sense of me is still there. In all of your experiences, I am doing this, I am seeing that, I am hearing that, the sense of me is stable. It's not just different senses of me. When you say, I'm hearing, there are one sense of me. I'm seeing, oh, that's another sense. No. It's all me, 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 me. Because the one me that you are is a stable me. And so in every vritti that you have, that me is as though reflected, stably reflected. It is the knownness which the vritti enjoys, the self-evident. And the knownness means this self-evident me that is never changes at all. Okay? So when the vritti is focusing on self-evident me, that gets the word aham, right? But it's the vritti that is getting the word aham. The vritti, the thought modification, you know, takes itself to be the aham, because just like in a clay pot, the pot's aham is clay, right? And so, of course, the pot is clay. And so, of course, it takes itself to be the clay, right? Because it is the clay pot. The pot says, I am the clay, because it is the clay. My mind says, I am the conscious being, because it is the conscious being. It just doesn't realize that the conscious being which it is free of it. That's the superimposition, right? And so when it turns toward me, then it gets the word aham. So the aham in the vritti is you, really. But the problem is that the vritti takes that aham, that sense of me, to belong to it. Where actually, which is ridiculous, why we don't see this, in the Adyasa Bhasha, Shankara says, in introduction to the Brahma Sutras, to the final book of analysis of all of the Upanishads, he says, this is impossible. How could this be but it is. What a wonder that it is. Because just look at this. You have so many thoughts, so many experiences. They all come and go and come and go.
and they come and go with me remaining stable. Completely stable. I do not come and go. I am the self of every vritti. I am the self of every experience. I'm not changing in any way. The me is the same. It is me. I am the one who is sad. I am the one who is happy. I am the one who is sick. I am the one who is old. I am the one who is young. I am the one who had this thought and then had this thought and then had this thought. I am the one who was happy a moment ago and is sad now. I am always the one who is there, stably there, for all of these experiences that are continually replacing each other. Now, how could it be? How is it possible that we take ourselves to be the experience that has just left when I am still here? That is not possible, and yet we do it all the time. All of these experiences come and go, I remain. How can I be them? How is it possible? It's not possible. But Shankara says, yeah. It's not possible. How do we do this? Mm. And once we realize it, we say that. Mm. How on earth? How on earth did I miss this? Mm. And how did we collectively, as the as all of the jivas in the world, miss this until we didn't? Mm. It's an amazing thing. So this focus on the pot's focus on the clay, or the vritti's focus on its own being, is responsible for the karta, because then the mind itself is identifying me with itself, with its qualities, even though I am totally free of its qualities. Just to think about this, if I take a ball of clay, I make it into a pot, squash the pot, make it into a plate, make the plate into a tumbler, what has happened to the clay? From the standpoint of the clay, clay just remains clay. And in fact, is there any pot? Is there any tumbler? Is there any plate, really? We experience it, but really there's only clay there. And that's my situation. There's really only me there. It's not going through any modification whatsoever. But I don't recognize that. It's not that I, the self, doesn't need to recognize that. The self doesn't have a problem. It's just me, conscious being. But the mind has ignorance. It has self-ignorance. And so it experiences me, and yet it doesn't know me. It doesn't know me in terms of who I am. It just has a self-experience of me. And it takes that self-experience, which is constant, never changing in any way, never, not even a ripple of change, and it's always present. The mind is never away from that. It's absolutely reasonable that it would take that to be me. But then upon analysis, you see, it can't possibly, the mind can't, it has to be mithya. It can't possibly be me, because it is continually changing, and I'm not. How is that possible? And so the task of the Upanishad is really not that difficult, except that we're so attached to, the mind itself is so attached to it being me, and there's a tremendous attachments there. But logically, you know, logically, experientially, when it's pointed out, this is not very hard. You know, when one thing remains and the other thing keeps going, keeps leaving, duh. You know, really. But of course, we even say that once we know, and then we wonder, gosh, what happened? Okay. So anyway, the directed inward as the content is the sat-chit, because that then the mind itself becomes the karta. I become the karta from the standpoint of the mind. When it's directed outward, then the I become this, the object. I, the same me that becomes the karta, is exactly the same me that becomes the object. Because it's just, we hide all that in language. There's a difference between I, the knower, and the known object. That's the language difference. But actually, there's just one conscious being that is the self of the knower and the self of the known. The knower is an object within the creation, sense organs, mind, which are really known, right? They are known. And also, the objects that are known through these instruments, they are also known. So I'm just going to give you one quick thing and then we're stopping. This is a little exercise, which I've done many, many times, but I just love it. If you look across the room, okay, to the wall, look to the wall that you're facing, you can say, that wall, the wall is known, right? The wall is known. I'm not using trick language. Just the wall is known, okay? The wall is known. Okay, now, as you move inward, you know, just bring it inward toward your own body, you know, the rug is known, the people are known, everything that's between the wall and this body is known, right? It's all known. These clothes that I'm wearing are known, right? My body is known. I don't think you can say it's not known. So my body is known. My sense organs are known. So now we're at the instruments. These instruments, the sense organs are known. I know if I can hear, I know if I can see or not see, I know if I'm blind. My mind is known. My thoughts are known, right? My emotions are known. The I thought is known. I am going to the store. It's a thought. I am. The I am thought is known. Right? My relationships are known. My knowledges are known. I know English the best. I know a little French. What I know and what I kind of know and what I really don't know, that is known. My knowledges, the degree of knowledge I have in something, and by fact of a limitless ignorance surrounding these little pockets of knownness, that's also known. I know that I'm ignorant. I know that I don't know Chinese. I have no clue. I do not know it. How do you know you don't know it? I promise, I know I don't know it. Honestly, I don't know it. How do you know? What's wrong with you? I know that I don't know. So now, so we're going into, yeah, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. The mind is known, the I thought is known. I am known. I am known, the me, the conscious being. I am known. Do you see what I mean? I am known. From the farthest subject to the nearest self is known. It is known. Where is the knower? The knower is a fabrication. The knower, the seer, the hearer is a fabrication. Because actually we never experience a knower. We only experience known vrittis, known maya. From the self-evident nature of myself, which is known, to all the way out to every experience without exception. There's no exception to it. Every experience that is there that I have is known. And then the ahankara, the I notion, which is just a type of thought, when I have a vritti, I'm looking at the vritti, I identify only the things that are not me as known, and I identify the things that are, I take to be me, you know, as the knower. But those things that I take to be me are also known. Where is the experience? It's a really wonderful meditation. Where is the experience of the knower? There is only the experience of the known. The known is self-evident, self-shining, conscious being. That's its swarupa, that's its nature. So I experience knownness, and then I use language to break that experience of knownness, the pervasive knownness, the non-dual knownness, which is the self, the being of the whole creation. I use language to divide it up. But I'm dividing up an experience of knownness into knower and known, even though there is no experience other than knownness. But then I have to differentiate me, the knower, from experiences that I don't identify, objects or namarupas, names and forms that I don't identify. I have to call those the known. But then I ask you, well, let's go ahead and find the experience of this knower that is different than the experience of the known. And you cannot find that. There is no such experience. There is self-evident conscious being which is known, and the whole universe shines after that knownness. And within the whole universe shining after that knownness, because of the subtle body, etc., there is the experience of knower known, because this gets to be only known. You know, this little table here doesn't get to be a knower, right? I get to be a knower and known. That's because I have a subtle body, I have sattva, I have sense organs and a mind. And so even though those are known, they get to be called something different. So it's a wonderful, even just kind of a walking meditation, to just realize that your experience really is very constant of a non-dual knownness, which we call me. I am, the me is both the consciousness that illumines the knower and the consciousness that illumines the known. The knower known, dyad, exists within maya, within time and space, and time and space is illumined by me, by conscious being, by knownness. So I am the knownness of this maya creation. It's maya creation, really, if once you call it maya, mitya. It doesn't have any existence, we just experience it. What has the existence, what is the being here, is the self-evident knownness of the Sat-Chit conscious being, which is the one non-dual self that I am. So, Om Tat Sat. Moment.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.